In local news, many of us talk about homelessness, but few of us have lived it. Diana Kim lives it. No, she's not homeless, but her mentally ill father lives on the streets in about a mile radius of Kaimuki. As she can, and as he'll let her, she helps. She chronicles her efforts and what she sees in the homeless communities, and she says there is much the rest of us who can only talk about it really don't know. Diana Kim joins us this morning. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Thank you for having me here.
Now, I know this is tough for you.
I am very nervous right now.
Well, and on many levels, some people just get afraid when they're in front of a mic, but this for you is such a personal issue, and it's one that is so fraught with variables. How your dad's behavior will be on any given day. Will he actually accept the help that you're trying to offer him? I mean, he walks around. Those of us who have seen him, you would know this man if you saw him. He walks around very scantily clothed, and some of his clothes are just sort of falling apart. And you see this, and you think, that's my dad. How do you do it?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, I'd say that in the first 6 months, he's actually been on the streets for about almost a year and a half now. The first 6 months were incredibly difficult. I had the hardest time just driving away because it was a question of, when am I going to see, you know, when am I going to see him again? Is he going to be in a worse condition when I come back? Is it going to be different? But on a day-to-day basis, you know, as time goes on, I've learned to accept where he is as much as I dislike it. And when I say accept it, I don't mean that I'm okay with where he is. What I mean is that I've learned that there are certain things that I can change and that I cannot change. And what I've tried to do is really look at the resources that are existing in our community today and try to utilize those and try to go ahead and be that bridge so I can get the help that's necessary for him to go ahead and be in a better place, to achieve mental clarity, basically.
That, though, means that he has to participate in it.
Yes, it does.
And that's very dependent on how you find him on any given day. He may tell you, yes, he wants help 1 minute and then be talking to agencies the next. And unless he follows through all the way, he stays on the streets.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happens. And that is the biggest challenge and barrier that I think has been missing in the conversation, is that really what happens is there are days, and there are family members and friends of his who would go out there and they would try to help, and they'd say, would you like help? I've said, Dad, would you like some help today? And some days he'll say, he won't even look at me. Other days he'll still look up and he'll say, yes, I want some help. And on those days when he wants that help, I have a number that's on speed dial. I go ahead and call it. But as soon as someone on that line is there, I swear to God, he will change his mind. And when he changes his mind, it's like all that hope just rushes out. It just rushes out because I've lost it. We've lost that window where he can get that help, because now he's saying he doesn't want it.
Which means it takes a terrible toll on you and your family as you go up and down riding that emotional wave of anticipation and feeling like you have it.
Yeah.
You almost have it in your grasp. Some
close.
Help for him. So close.
So close.
And then he sends it away.
Right. And it's because he has a severe mental illness. And so to expect that he's going to be capable to voluntarily, to willingly, and to consent the whole way through is, that's not reasonable. That's not something that you can expect out of a person who, from a just minute by minute, you know, he'll come in and out, literally, where you'll see him and you'll say, oh my gosh, he's there. He is of mental, you know, he's mentally sound right now. And then he'll just go away. And so the question is at what point can you say, okay, he consented, let's go ahead and just take him, even if it's against his will at that point.
But law doesn't allow you to do that.
No, it does not.
He's not in imminent danger to himself or to someone else.
Absolutely. He's very nonviolent. You know, he really doesn't bother anybody. And he doesn't sit or lie on the sidewalk, which is ironic because all these bills that, you know, talk about the homeless issue, he wouldn't fall into any of those categories anyway.
Which is to say that there are so many different forms of homelessness. And we've talked about this over and over again, of, you know, different parts of that community that we tend to lump together in that word, the homeless. For you, this is one that's not covered by a whole lot, and yet this man keeps walking around clearly mentally ill and unable to be helped because he won't let you. That's because of his mental illness.
That's it. That's it. He had a strong work ethic before he landed on the streets, truly. And I think that at some point, whatever kind of care coordination was going on, he decided, he didn't want to. And that's the thing, is you can't force a person to change, but you can at least assist them. And when they're in a position now at the bottom of that barrel, the support has to be there, and he's not going to be able to do this on his own.
What happened to change from when he was being able to monitor this? And we know when people go off their meds and they change their treatment and they decide, oh, gee, I'm fine. And then everything starts to devolve again.
I'll be honest. I spend more time with him now than I have ever in my entire life. And that's just because I didn't grow up with him. So I'm piecing the pieces together. And what I'm learning is that he had a job. He stopped working. He apparently, and I didn't know anything about his mental illness until more recently. He had been taking medication and then he had stopped, and I can understand why, because, he has mentioned when we've asked, would you like to take some medication? He'd say, no, I don't like the way it makes me feel. And so he stopped, and then his hygiene went down, and then he didn't have a job to get up and go to anymore. And one thing led to another, and his the people who were taking care of him, his mom, had passed away. And so there are a lot of different things that have happened in his life. And now the ironic thing is that even though I'm his daughter, I was coming from the outside view because I just didn't know who this person was. But now, I'm in a position where I've spent a lot of time with the homeless long before my dad landed on the streets. And so I'm looking at it like this is my opportunity to try to be his advocate and to try to go ahead and help this man who is my dad.
What do we need to do to help?
Oh, goodness.
I mean, as you look at how we have tried as a society to approach issues of homelessness and the different people who are in that population, and clearly, as you've said before, your father doesn't fall into those categories. What do we do to help someone like your dad?
You know what?
If you knew.
Well, the treatment facilities are there. I know that the resources are sparse. I understand that. But at this point, I'm thinking, San Antonio came up with a new model where they have allowed police officers to essentially act as, first responders for homeless in some ways, because they can go out into the community. They have certain tools where they can go ahead and basically pick these people, the homeless, off the streets and take them to treatment facilities instead of taking them to the jail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, as we're still dealing with what we could do for you, every day you try to do something, and some days you get to reach your dad mentally and some days not.
Yeah.
Some days it's a matter of a red ring pop, and will that activate a memory from when he was okay and fine and you were a tiny girl?
I was 4. That's how I got all my cavities, just because he would give me these ring pops behind my mom's back. And that's something that just happened a couple weeks ago. One of my friends said, what if, we spend so much time trying to fix him, change him. What if you just went out there and you were nice to him and showed him that you loved him? And that's one of the hardest things to do, especially because he's in such a vulnerable position. That puts me in such a vulnerable position. But I decided, okay, I'll give it a shot. Let's see if he'll remember this. And so I picked up some ring pops and I took it down to him. And he looked at it and he said, just go ahead and put it on the ground. I'll eat it later.
I know this is so hard for you, Dinah. Listen, we're going to stop now.
Thank you. That's fine.
But we will be in touch with you, and we have your blog on our website so people can read more of the stories and what happens in your family all the time as you go to school and make your life the best you can. And we wish you much happiness and success and hope that something good comes out of this. Mm-hmm. And I will talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Diana Kim is a part-time law student at the William S. Richardson School of Law. She's also a lecturer at UH Manoa and works in the healthcare industry. In her spare time, she walks the streets of Honolulu, documenting the homeless condition, and maintains a blog to chronicle her experiences with her dad and the homeless. You can find it on our website, hpr2.org.